Frozen in Time by Ali Sparks. London, February 2008. The man in the grey trench coat was surprised to see someone else come to the graveside. As the priest muttered something in Latin, anxious to be off to his lunch on his cold winter's day, there was a crunch of frosted grass and another man arrived wearing dark glasses and an unreadable expression. The only other mourner was a woman who had been Richard Tarrant's cleaner in the last few weeks of his life. She gathered her blue nylon coat around her, shivered, and then stepped forward to throw a handful of dirt into the coffin before smiling at the priest and walking away. Sad that a man who had once been so popular should have only a cleaner, a resentful old work colleague, and someone else from the government attend his funeral, because the newcomer certainly wasn't government, certainly was government, no question. Now he walked across, nodding respectfully to the priest who was making a swift exit. "For a moment back there," he said, "I thought I might have got extremely lucky." He held out his hand. "David Chambers." "Ernest Granville," said the man in the grey trench coat, and shook the proffered hand. "I suppose you were hoping I might be Henry Emerson." Chambers laughed. He looked slightly embarrassed. "We have no reason to think that old boy is even alive, but at least we know he wasn't a traitor. Tarrant did that much for his old friend. Cold comfort, though, telling us 50-odd years after the event." "It would be nice to let Emerson's family know that, wouldn't it?" said Chambers, taking off his spectacles and regarding Granville closely. "Yes," he agreed, "but I don't think either of us are going to do that just yet, are we? Just in case." "In case they're hiding the return of an old genius scientist. Or his son or daughter," Granville sighed. "Let's stop playing games, shall we? None of us has a clue. He could be dead or alive, in Russia or in Peru, for all we know, and his children too. We'll probably never know. I suppose you've a sleeper in place in Amhill, even so." Chambers smiled. He stooped down and threw the dirt on the coffin. "Treacherous old goat," he said. "Doesn't really deserve to rest in peace. Emerson could have taken this country into an astonishing future. But I suppose if he had done anything for the Soviets, we would have seen some evidence of it now. He probably refused and paid with his life." "Like I said," Granville threw his own handful of dirt, and they both turned away from the grave and began to walk. "We'll probably never know." Chapter 9. Ben knew this wasn't possible. There was no way he could travel back in time, but he couldn't suppress a shiver as Freddie led him back down into the vault for the third visit that day. They had hastily finished their food and were now descending the metal rungs once more. Freddie jumped the last few feet and was away down the corridor and opening the first chamber door before Ben and Rachel and Polly had reached the bottom rung. They followed him into the main sitting room and saw him fiddling with one of the boxes of the Izal toilet paper on the metal shelving to the right of the door. "Don't worry," quipped Rachel. "The curry wasn't that hot." But Freddie didn't pay her any attention. Now he was twisting something on the wall behind the cardboard packets, and then he grunted with satisfaction as there was a hollow rattle and the entire shelving unit swung towards him. Ben and Rachel gaped as a bright glow shone out in a fattening column in the wall behind the shelving. It was a hidden room. "Good, light still works," said Freddie. "Freddie," said Polly doubtfully, "Father said we weren't to go in. We weren't allowed." "That," said Freddie, "was before he froze us and disappeared for 53 years. I reckon he would have let us in by the time we turned 60, and I'm 66. Polly shrugged and followed him into the brightly lit chamber. Ben and Rachel looked at each other. "Should we get Uncle Jay?" breathed Rachel. "Shall I get him?" she gulped. "If you like," said Ben, "but I'm going in." He stepped into the room behind Freddie and Polly. It was small, about the size of a garden shed, with grey walls and more of the green swirly carpet. There was hardly any dust in it. Set into one of the walls was a small rectangular screen, perhaps 15 centimetres across and rounded at the edges. It was dark green, showing nothing. Beneath it was a monstrous machine of grey metal. It was the size of a piano, but bulkier, and had large buttons and stubbly black sliders on it. On the top of the machine, on a black spindle, sat a large reel of what Ben recognised as old oxide tape in a metal wheel, the kind of thing early reel-to-reel tape machines used, much bigger than the little reels in the recording machine which had greeted them in the other room. At the front of the machine, the proud letters AMPEX stood out. Beneath them, more letters read, "Mark 4 VTR. Ben peered at it, fascinated. He thought he might have seen something like it at the London Science Museum. This time... Is this... is it a... A video recorder? Freddy looked round, his hands resting with excited reverence on the buttons and faders. Yes, it is. Isn't that amazing? It certainly is, came a voice from the door, and Uncle Jerome drifted in, yet more amazement on his face, a look which threatened to burn into his features forever after today, thought Ben. How on earth did your father get hold of this? These weren't even commercially available until the autumn of 1956, and they cost an absolute fortune. Oh well, father had lots of connections, said Freddie breezily. He was a good friend of Lodge, the man who helped develop this for CBS. This was a prototype. He only got it last month. Freddie turned his attention to the many ducts and wires that fed into the back of the huge machine. I think it's still connected up. I wonder if the camera still works. Probably not. Do you mean to tell me that your father set up a video surveillance system? Gulped Uncle Jerome. His own CCTV? Freddie blinked. CCTV? Closed circuit television. His own camera recording something around here. Well, yes, that's what it was for, said Freddie. It was a spy camera, said Polly, widening her eyes theatrically. Like in spy films. He said we had to know who was lurking around inside the house, in case there were spies. Did he really? Asked Rachel, who had come in now, behind Uncle Jerome. Well, not exactly, admitted Polly, but it was jolly close to that. He thought that meant that meat man spent too long peering down his driveway and started to wonder if he was a Soviet. Father was a bit funny that way. Uncle Jerome had now joined Freddy in running his hands over the mammoth video recorder. The very first Ampex, he was murmuring. Just astounding. He looked at Freddy, and quite oddly for Uncle Jerome asked, Can I? Freddy grinned and shrugged. Go ahead. I don't really know how it works. Father never let me have a go. I just watched a couple of times. Uncle Jerome beamed at him and then turned back to the machine. After a brief pause, his fingers moved to the grey metal reel of oxide tape and picked up one end of the wide brown ribbon, which ran off it. He swiftly threaded it up and down through all sorts of metal rollers and pulley wheels, which bobbed smoothly in their settings, as if they were a few weeks rather than half a century old. Uncle Jerome fed the end of the tape into another, empty, grey metal reel and moved the spool around a couple of times until the tape caught and began to pull against the reel next to it. Now the tape tightened with a single electric bob of all the rollers and pulleys. The reels turned together. Uncle Jerome pressed a button on the machine. Everything clunked and bobbed again, and both tape reels wound faster and faster. Got to rewind the tape first, he said. It must have rolled on and then come off the spool when time ran out. Must have flicked around a few times, and then the power probably cut it out automatically. The huge plate of reddish-grey tape grew smaller and smaller on one side, and larger on the other, and Uncle Jerome stopped it just as one side shrank to the size of a saucer. Then he looked up at the screen above and reached over to it to turn a button. The discreet click was followed by a pinprick of light in the centre of the green screen. They waited in silence. After a few seconds, Rachel said, "Is that it?" Polly gave her a pitying look. "It's got to warm up, silly," she said. TVs in the 1950s took several minutes to warm up, exclaimed Uncle Jerome, not taking his eyes from the little screen. The cathode ray tube would heat slowly and gradually radiate across the screen. You had to be patient, something you children of today are not used to at all. Alas, something was happening on the screen. The dot had become a column, and the column was widening out to a speckly white and grey rectangle. A couple of minutes later, the whole screen was lit. Uncle Jerome took a breath and then pressed a button of the Ampex. There was a heavy clunk and a gentle hum, and the tape spools began to move again, in the reverse direction. Up on the screen, a grainy image began to gather. Yes, said Freddy. It still works. That's the gate. Ben squinted at the screen, not sure what he was seeing at first, but gradually beginning to recognise the view. It was the road outside Darkwood House. Darkwood Lane with the hedgerows on either side, June blossom, bright in black and white, blowing in a gentle breeze, exactly the same view that you would get if you climbed the chestnut tree by the gate, except that the road was rough shingle, rutted and unmade up, whereas today it was smooth grey tarmac. Everyone stared, rapt at the view. It was the least dramatic thing they were ever likely to watch on TV, and yet, quite thrilling. Could this be the same day? Asked Rachel, the same day you were sent to sleep. It looks like yesterday, agreed Polly. It was bright and sunny and a bit breezy, and there was blossoms out on the lane. Did your father run this camera continuously? Asked Uncle Jerome. I think so, said Freddy. Well, during the day at any rate. It was all a bit new. I don't know if he'd totally got the hang of it. He would come into his come in to change the wheels every couple of hours, so I don't suppose he could have run it all through the night. It was more of an experiment than anything else. "Look, look," cried Polly. "The meat man. This must be about 11:30. He always used to come before lunch." On the small screen, an old-fashioned van rolled into view, and a young man wearing a peaked cap and an apron got out. He disappeared round the back of the small vehicle and then reappeared carrying a large covered basket. "He used to bring our chops and lamb and pig's hearts every week," said Polly. "Pig's hearts? Ugh, yuck," said Rachel. Polly frowned. "What's wrong with that? Everyone knows pig's hearts make your brain grow. Mrs. M poaches them with onions. Oh, look, there he goes." The meat man had walked towards the screen and then on into the driveway out of view. For several minutes they stared at the van and then the back of the meat man's head went past and they saw him return his basket to the rear of the van, walk around, get back in and go. "It'll be you next, Freddy," said Polly. "You came back from the youth club right after the meat man came. I remember." She was not wrong. Uncle Jerome sped up the wheels and 2 minutes later, Freddy suddenly shot across their view on a large old-fashioned black bicycle with a basket on the front. Uncle Jerome wound it back, Freddy zooming backwards this time and then played it at normal speed. Ben felt a shiver run through him. The tape showed a time so obviously 53 years old, with the unmade-up road and the 1950s delivery van. But Freddy, jumping off the saddle and wheeling the big black bike in the past the gate, looked exactly the same as he did now, standing right here next to them. He was wearing the same clothes. In his basket on the front of the bike was a striped paper bag and a comic of some kind. Ben squinted and made out Eagle on the top of it, in bold, angular letters. "Blast it, I never did get to read that," muttered Freddy. "I suppose it's long gone now. Never got to eat those bullseyes either. Rotten luck." "Oh no, don't tell me you ate bullseyes too," grimaced Rachel. "They're sweets, you goose," laughed Polly. After Freddy had gone in, nothing else happened. After a while, Uncle Jerome wound the tape forward at high speed. "What time was it when your father put you into into status?" he asked, eyes still on the screen and hands poised above the buttons. "Just after lunch," said Polly. "We had chops. I cooked them. Mrs. M was off that week." "So, about now then." Uncle Jerome was watching a dial of numbers. "This is the time code," he said. "We've been watching for about 90 minutes worth now, and if your meat man and Freddy here came in just before lunch, I believe you would have eaten by now." "Yes, we ate around 1, I should say," said Freddy, glancing over Uncle Jerome's shoulder at the spinning time code numbers. "So I reckon we'd be down in the chamber about now. Maybe we'll see Father going off somewhere. Do you think?" Ben eyed the spool on the side that was getting smaller and smaller as the tape wound on. There wasn't much of it left. He really hoped they would see something else before the tape ran out completely, but as it went on shrinking, there was nothing else but the lane and the blossoming blossom blowing in the wind and the occasional bird flitting in and out of the hedgerows. "Not much more now," sighed Uncle Jerome. "Sorry." But even as he said this, a shadow was thrown across the lane at the top right corner of the screen. A young man walked into view. He was wearing a jacket, a tie and a Trilberry hat. He paused at the gate, leaning on it while he did something with his shoe, pulled a stone out of it, Ben thought, and then glanced down the driveway before walking on up the hill. Something tugged at Ben's memory, but this was clearly just his imagination. He didn't know the man. This was 40 years before he was born. Now the tape was clinking and whirling on in the spool, filling up almost to full. Uncle Jerome prepared to stop it. "Wait," said Rachel just as he went to stop the tape. "Look." As soon as she said this, the tape ran out, flicking madly like a whippet's tail as the spools spun on at speed and then began to gradually slow. "There was something else. Something dark came in. Look, you have to look again." Uncle Jerome stopped the spools, rethreaded the tape and wound it back slowly. Just as the tape began to flicker, where it was a little squashed from being threaded at one end, something dark did come in. The bonnet of a car, a black car gliding up to the gate. Only the first glimpse of windscreen rolled into view before the tape ended. Freddy and Polly looked at each other wide-eyed. "A car!" gasped. Freddy and Polly looked at each other wide-eyed. "A car!" gasped Polly, and Freddy nodded. "So, a car. Whose car? Could be anyone," said Ben, exasperated and disappointed. "What does that tell us?" "You don't understand, Benedict," said Uncle Jerome. "Cars were not that common an occurrence in 1956, even on through roads like Darkwood Lane only goes up to the woods and down. Anything other than the delivery van was very rare. Someone came along that day, almost certainly for a reason. "But who?" said Polly. "Who drove up to us? Can't we see something?" Uncle Jerome held the image of the car steady on the screen. It had a high black bonnet and a metal grille like long teeth between two round headlights. The number plate was only partially in view, obscured by a part of the five-bar gate. "The man before," said Polly. "He would have seen it, wouldn't he? He can't have been that far on, just seconds on from it, don't you think? He would know." "Yes! Brilliant old girl," snapped Freddy. "All we need is to put a notice in the local paper asking for anyone who might remember seeing a black car while he was passing in 1956. Easy." Polly gave him a furious look and turned on her heel and walked out of the room. "Come on," said Ben, "it's really late. You need to get some sleep. We all do." "Quite right," muttered Uncle Jerome. "Off you go now. Early to bed. Off to sleep." Ben knew he was desperate to get rid of them so he could examine the Ampex undisturbed. "We've slept a lifetime," grumbled Freddy. But he was looking very tired. Ben patted his shoulder. "Come on, mate. Honestly, it all seems a lot better in the morning." He steered Freddy and Rachel out, and Uncle Jerome stared up at the screen for a long time. He wound back the tape a little way and squinted at the man with something in his shoe. Then he looked at the car again. Then the man again. Then his mouth fell open and his hand went to his temple. "No," he breathed. "No, it can't be."